With the CM Punk angle, I think you and I would both be agreeing that it was so good. Mm-hmm. About a month and a half. Excuse me, by the way.
You didn't mean that, of course.
And it was so well, but, you know, it's very obvious to me at this point that that angle only appeals to, or emotionally at least, that only a small portion of the audience gets into it. Now, whether that's because they've done a lousy follow-up with it and they haven't really explained it, or maybe just not that many people are into CM Punk, you know, like mainstream. I don't know what the answer is, but it seems to me that the WWE, I don't know if they have an audience problem or the audience is a problem, if that makes sense.
Okay.
In that, you know, back in the day, wrestling audiences were very homogenous. You know,
right.
I mean, you know, in the 80s, it's interesting now. Now it's obviously a lot easier. Most guys would prefer to be heel because it's easier to be a heel. When back in the day, it was pretty easy to be a babyface in the cartoonish WWE. You know, you just kind of got like a, you know, a silly, you know, the junkyard dog. He came out with his little music. Grabbed them cakes. He had his chain. He brought kids in the ring and danced, and he was over. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a lot of charisma, too. I'm simplifying it. You know,
right.
Jake Roberts had a snake. People cheered for him. You know, it was pretty simple. But and genuinely, fans cheered for the good guys. They booed the bad guys.
Yeah.
Right? Now, it's, and I don't know if it's because they don't really book anymore, they just write, or what, or they just misinterpreted the audience so many times. There's been so many botched angles, but the audience is clearly smarter now than it used to be, and the internet has a lot to do with that.
Right.
But people just seem to cheer for who they wanted. Like CM Punk is so interesting to me,
mm-hmm.
and John Cena is almost kind of like the inverse of him,
right.
In a way where CM Punk, they could have him do any angle, I think, right now. And granted, you know, because of the PG, I mean, that you know, the ceiling's a little limited on what they could do. You
sure.
know, I mean, like, you know, you brought up offhand when we were talking about this a little bit, the Dudleys, you know, power bombing, you know, 80-year-old Mae Young or whatever she was.
Right.
You can't do that anymore. And what's funny is that's what actually turned the baby face.
That is.
You know, so it just showed how different it is. You know, the old, my God, they just hit an old woman. And, you know, it's supposed to get this huge heel heat. That doesn't work anyway anymore. But my point is, with CM Punk, he's a very difficult wrestler to book in the same way I think that John Cena is. Because there's going to be a substantial portion of the audience that no matter what he does will always cheer him.
Okay.
Much like Cena, no matter what they have him do, unless if he just, I don't know, the only way is maybe if he, even if he had, you know, he's improved now. From when, you know, we did the old SNS shows, he stunk.
Right.
And was not having the caliber matches that you need to be having in his spot. But he's
right.
Okay now. He's had good matches.
Right.
And granted, he's had some good dance partners, so to speak. But just like him, no matter what he does, people will always boo him. So my point is, the WWE is, it's such an interesting time period where I think that the audience and a lack of maybe understanding, mm-hmm. and the audience being just kind of difficult, has made it hard for them to have these kind of good angles because you don't have that, okay, everyone's going to get behind this guy. And like Steve Austin, Vince McMahon.
Right.
Perfect storm. Vince McMahon, douche. Everyone is going to boom. You know, no one was really cheering for Vince McMahon. And Steve Austin, you know, everyone's going, you know, you just don't have that anymore. And it's so difficult. I don't know if I did the best job of explaining that because you've made several confused faces in the last 5 minutes.
I had what might have been a little bit of a revelation here. Are you indicating perhaps that the concept of the Impact Zone dueling crowds, is that phenomenon making its way through here?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
All right.
Well, here's my thing. The WWE has not had a successful wrestling angle. What was the last successful wrestling angle they did? Let's talk about this. Because when you look at...
level success? Boom success or just a really good angle?
All right.
Because Triple H Batista was pretty doggone good for something that wasn't
right,
in a boom.
You're right, it was. You're right, and it was very successful. All right, let's talk about this. 2000... financially was the best year the company ever had.
Yep.
Okay. So let's think post that year, okay?
Okay.
Because that's when obviously the time period where everyone starts playing fantasy booker, oh, they should have done this, is the invasion.
Yeah.
That stunk. Okay. And now it still did okay money just because of what it was, but it was obviously failed. They didn't do it right. It was not
right.
booked properly. Then you had the Hogan thing, okay?
Okay.
That didn't work right, okay? Some say that it might. I mean, they had a very famous match with Rock. But the NWO, I should say.
Yeah.
That was kind of a bust.
Major underachievement.
The brand extension was kind of, you know, their next big thing. I'm just throwing things out there, too. That was like, kind of over. I've always hated it.
Yeah.
You know my opinion.
Yeah,
on the Braves.
I have too.
Because let's talk about those three things, okay?
Okay.
The invasion, and people don't, obviously they did not give the WCW guys a fair shake.
No.
But here's the problem. There was a certain portion. Audience issues.
Mm-hmm.
Look, we can talk about, you and I can talk about that Chavo Guerrero and Lance Storm
mm-hmm.
are these underrated guys, and oh, they're finally going to get a big chance.
Right.
And they should be. The bottom line is this. Should they have really been, would that have, would the audience at large have bought them, like if Lance Storm should have started beating Undertaker one week on Raw, would the audience have bought that?
No, but yeah, that's like a caricature type argument, because to say that DDP, Booker T,
oh, they could
should have been,
the
guys that were on the cusp, guys that had held the big gold in the other promotion, those are the guys at a bare minimum that should have been booked stronger. I think we can agree on that, and I've heard enough of your rants about DDP and Undertaker and Sarah on the old SNS to know that you agree with me.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Look, like I said, it wasn't done properly.
Right.
But that angle did lack star power from the, you know, it was because it was
Yeah, they didn't bring in the guys. Right.
But here's the thing. So I think that there was an issue there, and McMahon realized that he didn't do it, execute it properly, follow through on it, that the crowd just didn't view that WCW. It wasn't this idea. You know, the whole legacy of that was you got a couple dream matches, Rock Hogan. But here's the interesting. Hogan is a better example of what I'm mm-hmm. trying to say here. He's a much better example. Let's go to that, the Hogan thing, okay?
Okay.
Now, I'm like one of five people that don't really like that match against The Rock.
Okay.
Because I remember watching it and being like, why, Toronto, are you doing this?
Do you not like it because of the legacy of what it spawned? I mean, can you watch it just for the moment itself and say that was a great moment in time?
It was a great moment.
Yeah.
To me, it's kind of that Hogan-Andre scale where it's not a good match.
Right.
It's a great moment. You know,
right.
It's something that fits nice on a video package.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing with Hogan, okay? Obviously, people if the WWE could have had their dream scenario with the invasion, let's say they could have just done the invasion perfectly from that. They didn't have to worry about buying these contracts out. They just got the WCW roster.
Goldberg, Scott Steiner, they're all in it.
Yes.
Sting. Okay.
Okay. You probably have Hogan as your lead WCW guy because, well, first of all, you have to be realistic. He wouldn't have taken it any other way.
Right.
Okay. The crowd didn't it's interesting that the crowd really was the one who kind of sabotaged their angle from their perspective by cheering for him. And they didn't expect that. Remember, it was like this, like, you know, they talked about during the fan weekend, like, wow, Hogan's really pretty popular here in Toronto.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and like, you know, they were like, it's a real 50-50 crowd here, folks, you know?
Yeah.
With The Rock. And it's interesting that, you know, okay, everyone's like, well, okay, you have Hogan come in and lead this big heel group of WCW guys. I don't think that would have worked. Because there's a certain portion of the crowd that just said, you know, screw it. You think we're cheering for Hogan?
No, I. You know what? Here's the thing. I disagree with that, and I'll tell you why. As somebody who went to the Invasion pay-per-view.
I was there.
Yeah. And heard all the Mizarks around me, like, we're going to cheer for our guys to beat these here outsiders. Who do these WCW wrestlers think they are coming in here?
You just had some bad seats.
Yeah. Dude, I was surrounded by that, by all of them. I mean, you think those people would have embraced the outsiders? They bought the invasion angle. It was over. They really, really did. These are our WWF homegrown wrestlers.
That's the WWE universe. That,
exactly. Yeah.
Really?
I'm telling you.
That group was. I don't know. To me, I don't think a lot of people bought it. I think to me, it's so interesting. And Hogan is an example. Like that. Look, we don't care how this guy's booked.
Right.
We just like this guy. And shame on the – maybe it is the WWE's fault for not understanding who the crowd likes and who they don't. Now, CM Punk is real interesting because you would think based on the react – you know, the CM Punk chants are very audible,
they
obviously.
Are.
That you would think that, okay, he's got to be a babyface. But it doesn't seem like it's working like the way it should. You know, I mean, I don't know if you watch Raw. It seems like it's been diminished returns every week. Okay, it's what's interesting is when he initially cut the angle.
Yeah,
he did so as a heel.
He did.
You know,
it was meant to go that way.
And it's funny because he even heeled on the fans a little bit.
He did.
You know that has not been brought up again.
Right.
And to me, it's just like, you know, I watch it and it's just the way that, you know, when you have booking, it's like, okay, this is who the crowd likes. This is who they don't like. And it just seems like they keep screwing up on that. You have guys not in the right roles, and
well, they've come close, I think, to addressing the fact that the first promo was a heel promo, and here's how, in an unspoken way, because it's a thing where they seem to be referring to that moment, that that was like the transformative moment of CM Punk's career, if not his life, that he was a guy who was going along and dealing with these frustrations and everything like that, but that it seems to now be accepted within the canon of their universe that on that night in June 2011, he grabbed the mic and he changed everything. And that,
but did he change? And Julie, here's, well, this may be why the angles don't work, because it didn't change anything, it didn't seem.
Well, that's true.
Because
that's
here
true.
He is, he's not the champion. He's a little higher on the card, okay? He gets featured in the better time slots now. He gets protected a little more. He obviously had a phenomenal, you know, one of the, you know, probably the best 20 matches in the history of the company.
Yeah.
And that's good. And he probably gets paid. He definitely gets paid more. But, you know, nothing's really changed. Here's what's interesting to me. Mm-hmm. The booking has been so bad over the last 10 years that do you ever get the sense that fans sometimes just cheer for guys who are being booked correctly?
Sure.
Do you ever get, like, The Miz is an example. The Miz is such a classic heel.
Yeah.
He's a douche that came from the real world. That did not, you know, he didn't grow up as a wrestling fan. He did actually grow up as a wrestling fan, but, you know, he kind of like, oh, I'm a star. I'm too good for, you know, you people. But remember, at the Money in the Bank, people were cheering for him in the match because he's kind of booked Del Rio's the same way, too, in some occasions, where he gets some, he's a classic heel, and he gets cheers just because he's being booked properly.
But the Miz has, I mean, and here's the funny thing. I listened to your old SNS shows from 06, and let's keep in mind, I'm going to say this in your defense when I say how much you were bearing him. They tried to shoehorn him in as a face. They had no self-awareness about this character.
And by the way, there's a show, if you find, I'm not tooting my own horn here, that I said if you turned him heel, he could be a honky-tonk man. There is a show out there that exists, me and the little fellow, we talked about that.
That's true. But you guys at the time really saw nothing in him, said that he would be on your cut list for the company.
Because he was being booked bad.
I understand.
Yeah,
I'm not saying this to throw it back in your face, but it's a thing where you look at it now. He's been such an effective heel. There were people making comparisons around the time of WrestleMania, and maybe it's a little bit lazy, but there is something almost rock-like in this guy's charisma, as far as, like, even when he's a bad guy out there, people are finishing the catchphrases and everything. He could be very effective as the cool heel turned anti-hero face. I think that there's
to me, I don't think the Miz would be a good face. I do not think he should ever be a face.
They'll do that, and I think it'll work.
To me, like, when I look at the Miz, it's like, it's just like, to me, like, Rock is a little different, but to me, I always would like the Rock better as a heel myself.
He did some great stuff.
Well, 98, so, I mean, too.
Well, I'm thinking about when there was the backlash against him and he played into it.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, see, that's good because, once again, but here's what's interesting about that. You know, he did do a great job, but it was because some people still cheered him. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It just, I guess what I'm, my whole point in this, and I don't know if I've explained it well or not, I whenever I watch it, wrestling these days, it just always strikes me that the days of just like, you know, the Hamad, where, you know, everyone's cheering for one guy.
Right.
Everyone's booing this guy. The days of the Junkyard Dog is over. You know what I'm saying? I mean, to me, the dueling chants is kind of like stupid, but like, I don't know. I think it's very tough. I think it really, they don't understand. The company does not understand how to interpret the modern crowd.
But you've always put over, and I go back to your old SNS shows there, Vince McMahon, Shades of Grey, you tell us what you want. Well, what's wrong with that?
They're nothing, but here's the problem. They don't know how to interpret it. People are telling him his problem is
people are telling
him
contradictory things is what they're telling him. Some people are telling him one thing, some people are telling him another thing.
That's true, and also, he doesn't listen.
That's true.
You get this fat Kevin Dunn in the room, okay, you know, saying what he has to say.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's certain guys, it's Bizarro Land, you know.
Triple H, Eugene, SummerSlam 04, also in Toronto. It's Bizarro Land here, folks.
Yeah.
Everybody cheered Triple H.
Exactly. I think they're almost cheering good booking now.
Okay.
And booing bad. Like, to me, it's like, you know, look at the guys that don't get much of a reaction.
Right.
It's not because they're not good guys, they're not bad. Their booking is just bad, and no one cares, really.
Well, let me ask you, to turn this full circle on the whole thing with today's audience and everything, it's been so long since, and maybe this, maybe we're at start of the healing point here, when we can look back at any part of Chris Benoit's career instead of what he turned into. But are you comparing this in any way to the post WrestleMania 20 period with Benoit? We Smarks loved it. We loved that Benoit was on top. It looked like they were catering to us, but it fizzled. Now the booking was the was,
I don't
was
think
horrible.
It fizzled.
Well, the booking was horrible. He's wrestling Kane in the semi-main on the pay-per-view.
Well, yeah, but those paper, if memory serves me correct, he didn't flop at the box office, did he?
Well,
I mean, he wasn't pushed very. I mean, he wasn't pushed. I mean,
I don't think he. I don't think he.
I mean,
he
wasn't Hulk Hogan in 1986.
No,
but
no,
I mean, you know,
he didn't drag him down. They were at a lower ebb. They were at that post boom slump. He didn't. All right, so you're right. He didn't drag him further. He also didn't raise him up the way they were hoping WrestleMania 20 would. So it's a thing where I look at that like I'm almost making a comparison to right now, because we Smart Marks loved the CM Punk stuff. We loved the Benoit stuff at the time. But are you saying that there's a larger problem with the populace as far as the thing getting traction with CM Punk?
I remember when CM Punk first came in.
Okay.
And people like you and me were like, oh, my God, just push him right away.
Right.
You know, he should be, my right. God, he should be main WrestleMania.
I remember your early shows.
His first WrestleMania, he should be in the main event.
Yeah.
Right. My God, this guy is so good. I got DVDs with him on it from 03. But Paul Belfry.
I remember that
name.
I remember that guy.
Can I, Miles, say we can edit this out? Yes. Okay. That other guy. Can I say the guy with the mustache?
Go for it. Yeah. No. There's
the guy with the mustache.
This is not a Belfry free zone. You can talk about that. Yeah.
I was like, I don't understand why all these people are hyping this CM Punk.
Well,
remember that? And to me, he is. And I'm not trying to rip on anyone here. Maybe I am.
Paul's the classic anti-smart mark, though.
Yes. Where he's like, oh, what's this guy so good for? You know, it's like to me. You know, there are people like that. Like CM Punk, it's interesting. People always say, you know, he gets these loud cheers.
Mm-hmm.
But they always say, what are the reports always? It's not a lot of people. They're just cheering really loud.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I don't think he – I mean, he doesn't have, like, that Steve Austin. You know, people like – well, everyone wants to compare CM Punk to Steve Austin as, like, this anti-establishment rebel.
Money in the Bank was probably the biggest pop since the boom period.
Yes, but see –
that was his hometown.
See, when people who don't really, like my friends that are my age that loved wrestling when they were younger and don't really watch anymore now, want to know, they always like ask these like generic, like these questions that I couldn't possibly give them a simple answer. Like, why is wrestling not as good anymore? You know, like is what people will say. You know, maybe a person that would read like a Bill Simmons might ask something like that. And he writes okay stuff on wrestling, I think.
In a word, creative.
Yeah, okay.
Notwithstanding.
Well, no. Part of the problem is the death of the territories.
Yeah,
because,
guys are green.
Because the jump from non-WWE to WWE is so tremendous. Where back in the day, okay, WWE was realistically since like 85, 86 was always the number one game in town. But and it obviously has become more and more, you know, up as the years have gone on. But when you went from like when the Rockers, I'm just first thing that comes to mind. When they went from the AWA to the WWE,
that was
they were ready. They were ready. It was not like going from Ring of Honor to the WWE. You know, when they took guys from, you know, something else. I don't know. When Randy Savage came from Memphis to WWE, that was not this huge.
There's all the examples.
Crowds were bigger, the production was better, but they were seasoned, they were ready
when
to
would
go.
Rate, I mean, the best example would be when he was rating Watts. Because Duggan and DiBiase and all of those, JYD, boom, 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 those guys were ready before they got
there.
And
they had worked in a lot of different places and learned a lot of different styles.
Drawn money.
Where the WWE now, there's basically two styles of wrestling. There's the WWE style.
Yeah.
And there's the indie style.
Right.
You know, and then there's, I guess there's these crappy people that are in TNA that still populate the upper card of TNA that are just doing what, you know, that actually were from the territory eras that...
Yeah,
you know, just stink. You know, I mean, their style is we're really old and we're desperately trying to do spots that we used to do well, you know, 25 years ago.
Yeah,
but how embarrassing is Sting, by the way?
Sting, yeah, it's awful. And I've always been a guy that's appreciated Sting. When I was a kid, I popped for him.
I put on TNA once and saw him behaving like the joke. I thought it was the worst thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's an embarrassing coda to his career, but you could say that for Kurt Angle, Ric Flair, and anybody else that wrestles for them
sure.
these days. You know, it doesn't separate them. But Ring of Honor, though, It's an interesting thing here because I understand the indie style is different, but this whole notion that they might be trying to fashion more of a relationship with Ring of Honor, and I understand Ring of Honor is not going to overtly take the bottom position in the relationship to where
they're
just the developmental thing, but that of being a thing where guys are in Ring of Honor, get ready to go to the WWE. It seems to me that that might be more of a good thing and something at least close to what you're talking about. The closest thing that's possible in today's climate is to have a place to try to get guys ready for that. FCW doesn't do it. With all due respect,
no.
You're not working crowds big enough.
There aren't enough places now where they could do this, but a couple of years ago, the early part of the decade, there were the indies, there was more than just Ring of Honor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have groups out west, other groups in the northeast, you had CZW. I thought the WWE should have bought all these indie groups and made them into mini territories.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you why. Not only could it get these guys you've never heard of seasoned and ready for that, mm-hmm. but when you get another issue they have is, you know, Jim Duggan, you mentioned his name before. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy who's, Jake Roberts is another guy. Very, you know, not the greatest wrestler of all time, but
right.
very fondly, if you talk to people our age,
right.
and assuming they've watched wrestling, they don't completely
nostalgia.
Hate wrestling or whatever,
yeah.
and they've watched it, something they enjoyed it at least for a small period of time.
Right.
They remember those guys, obviously. You talk, they could probably, oh, man, remember that snake when he used to throw him on there, you know,
yeah.
whatever, we laugh at it, but, I mean, hey, it accomplished its goal, right? Those guys were only in the company for, like, 6 years.
Right.
You got guys like Kane and stuff have been around for, like, 12. And
right.
it's like, guys like that, it's just needless filler on
right.
these shows. You could send these guys, they're still making their good money,
right.
but they're not on to, you send them in territories, it keeps these smaller, can you imagine like sending like, I mean, Kane's a bag, I'm just using Kane as an example, but you send him to do a program in Ring of Honor for like 6 months.
Okay.
Okay, maybe it attracts, now the Ring of Honor diehards will not like that.
Is that at all similar to like the Six Flags Louisville type shows?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that
All
was
right.
a good idea. And
okay.
guess when developmental was good for the WWE,
at
by the way.
Yeah,
yes,
time.
When
yeah.
And now granted you need smart people, okay?
Right.
You can't have some of the you know morons they got running this thing now.
Right.
Okay. I mean Jim Cornette obviously did a great job getting
right.
these guys and whatnot. But yes, those
okay.
are the kind of things where but it's different where you take it a step further. Where Kane's just like he's just gone. You just don't mention him ever on WWE
right.
TV. Now I don't know how you do like it'd be interesting to see when he came back. Well, no. Screw that, because the comeback pop, that's like the like number one thing.
Right.
It's so funny with the comeback pop, too.
Right.
This is a phenomenon I want to talk about.
Okay.
I don't even know if any of the last
Money
half hours made
pop.
Sense.
No,
by
I have.
It's so interesting to me with the comeback pop. Triple H started this in 02 when he came back for the Rumble.
It's a beautiful day.
Yeah, yes. You know, Christian, he's just out there spinning U2 records. But it doesn't matter if you're a good guy. These days, it does not matter what you were doing before the comeback.
Right.
You will always get cheered for the comeback pop. Because
right.
people are just happy to see you.
Right.
Isn't that great? Like,
and if guys are trying to come back and be heels, then they have to work real hard. Although, having said that, there is a part of that that's timeless. Because I remember from Ric Flair's book, when he came back in 1976 after the plane crash, he was a real object of sympathy. The man broke his back, for
yeah.
God's sakes. The first skit that he does out on TV here, he's going through this whole, oh, I got all these cards and letters, whatever. Throws them on the floor. I got one from Raquel Welch and one from Joey Hetherington, and the rest of you can go cram it.
Yeah.
And that's
well,
how he did it.
Yeah,
so,
true.
To a certain extent, it's timeless.
Mr. Kennedy, by the way, who unfortunately because he's been...
Kennedy!
Unfortunately because he's been soiled by the atmosphere of TNA.
Yeah.
I never thought he should have been cut. I liked him.
Oh,
I
yeah.
Thought, I saw potential.
Yeah, but Randy Orton whined about how he allegedly injured him or tried to.
Yeah, well, Randy Orton ain't nothing special.
No.
Okay. Overrated.
His fecal matters in the purses are another story, but
okay,
he himself
I like that,
is not.
Though. You know me. That's going to get on my
yeah.
But I remember he did it great. He did it to what you said. I'll never forget this. I don't know what it was from. Might
uh-huh.
be maybe 07. Okay? It was right after he got injured. Remember? Oh, no. I remember what it was from. I remember exactly what it was from. Remember, he wins Money in the Bank. Okay?
Yeah.
And he got injured. They thought he was going to be really injured, so they took his thing away from him. Remember?
Yeah.
And then it turned out he wasn't that injured, and
the
he came
general,
back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he came out, and everyone was going crazy for him because they were happy to see him back. And I remember he, you know, so you'll have to look this up on YouTube or something like that. He did something great to really get the crowd against him and stuff like that. But you're right. It, to me, it can be done.
Right.
But a lot of these guys don't have the talent to do it.
That's true. That is kind of thing of separating the men from the boys. Well, you and I had talked off air about when you were doing the old SNS show in 2006, talking about John Cena, and about how he was struggling against Kurt Angle, against Triple H, because people weren't playing around with the heel-face dichotomy the way that they were supposed to. Flash forward to the summer of 2011 with him and CM Punk, a little bit of the same thing here. I have a larger question to ask you, because you're a historian. You followed the thing, as do I, over the period of time. From 2006 to 2011, I'm just going to pick out those 5 years. Maybe you could even go back in time a little further than that. Can you remember a five-year period with as much continuity in the wrestling business as we've seen? If you were to take WWF 84 to 89,
I think continuity is the wrong word.
Staleness?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I mean,
because it's so interesting, because I've never it's so interesting because where you were going with this, I didn't mean to cut you off. That was rude.
No,
that was rude.
You got
that
the gist
was
of my,
rude.
You got
but
the gist
John
of my
Cena
point.
Is almost the same person, the same exact character.
He is
today that he was in 2006. You got the same dueling chants. You know, the same. You know, the kids and the women like him. The smart marks don't. You know, is he good? You know, should you know? You're asking the same questions. You know, should they turn him heel? Merchandising says no. You know,
and that's
so interesting to me that they would consider that, because back in the day, that never would have happened. They would have turned him heel in a heartbeat. Because funny is, and here's my point in this.
They're marketing to kids, though, and all the merchandising's to kids, and you cut off the kids' sale if he goes heel.
But has there ever been a wrestler like this?
No.
Because it's interesting because, you know, it used to be, you know, people like you and I, you know, we can reference some matches here that a lot of the younger crowd that just came in after the second, have no idea about. I'm talking about matches like Dynamic Dudes, Freebirds, Halloween Havoc 89. You remember this match? Rockers, Power and Glory, SummerSlam 90. Now, those were both in Philly. But it used to be, remember back in the day when it used to be like this really cute cult thing when the babyface got booed out of the building?
Yeah.
You know, like it was just like, whoa, like you got to watch this match just because the baby, it was so shocking to see a match where the baby face would get booed out of the building.
Right.
It was kind of something like a company would never be like, let's never bring up this match ever again.
Right.
And we're going to turn this act heel because that's awful. You know, you can't be a baby face and draw that kind of reaction at a show.
Right.
Cena's been drawing it now for 5-6 years, and they've still got a position as the top babyface. I don't know if what that means, really. I guess, I mean, I don't know if they're the stupidest, most stubborn group of people in the world, or if these fans are just kind of like, you know, got to get with, you know, I don't know.
You know what the worst part is?
It's just so weird. I've never, John, there has literally never been to be a top babyface for as long as he has. I mean, you're talking Hogan territory, and that's it.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, Austin's top run. I mean, he had that stupid heel run in 01, which he did well with, but it was ill-fated. But yeah, I mean, basically, you know, his run at the top was 98 to 02.
Austin abbreviated,
and that's with a huge injury that took him out of 2000.
Yeah.
I mean, other than Hogan, no one's had a bigger run as a babyface on the top than Cena ever in the history. Well, I mean, post-Hogan era. I mean, you got the Bruno San Martinos, but, you know.
Bob Backlund says hi also.
Bob Backlund stinks, though. Well, that's kind of interesting, too. People booed him a lot when he was positioned.
Oh, they did.
Expect towards the end. But their stubbornness, it's just so bizarre.
Well, here's the thing, though, too. No, it's avoidable. I mean, not completely avoidable. We could sit here and play Monday morning quarterback, but it's at least part of it was avoidable, and it is provable, and here's why. You look at what was happening this year in the build-up to WrestleMania with him and The Rock. All right, now The Rock was still blowing him away, but he was starting, and he still peppered it with a little bit of too cuteness, but he was starting to go back in the direction a little bit of 03 when he first turned face, and then he got cut off by the PGism and OMG, can't make gay slurs, and you know the gay groups are jumping on him and stuff like that. If Cena was a little more like he used to be back when he first,
that would help.
Face,
you're right. That would
help
because that crowd does. You know, it's not a cure all.
It's not a panacea.
Yeah, I mean,
you're
not going to draw X amount of dollars because you start calling people queers. I mean, you know what I'm saying. But I mean, but it would certainly help.
I would laugh.
Yeah, exactly. But you're right. That does hurt his case that he's kind of in the PG ear. He's kind of seen as like this PG melting pot of like Austin, Rock and Hogan, you know what I'm saying? Like they've kind of taken parts that they like out of those three.
Let's not forget Bob Backlund, because he, in many ways, like he's Bob Backlund 2K11. He would never in a million years believe he's Bob Backlund, but the whole squareness of the character relates to Bob Backlund like nobody else that I've ever seen.
Yeah, and he also, some of it's not his fault,
right?
In that he The writing is really lousy.
Yeah.
And that he's, I don't know if it's just the way it's booked. Like, there's a lot of that, everyone always complains about that comedy.
Weak-ass comedy.
Yeah, it's bad comedy. And that, he doesn't take the angles seriously and stuff like that. I mean, the stuff with Del Rio is good, so.
We talk about the Attitude Era, but has there been anybody post-1989 that's drawn with, he fights for what's right? That's more dated than even the Attitude Era. That's straight 80s.
No one buys that anymore.
No.
I mean, I don't like superhero movies because I don't believe, it's kind of funny that I'm kind of not complaining, but hypothesizing about something that I truly believe in that I don't believe in this. It's just hard to find, I guess, in Austin 98, a Hogan in 86, where someone where just everybody likes him.
Right.
And it's just really tough. I mean, here's the perfect example. Michaels, in 96 was their top babyface, right?
Right.
He was getting booed hard on some shows. Survivor Series 96 and MSG. Now, MSG always hated Shawn, but he got booed out of the freaking building that night, okay? They tried, with Cena, to be Shawn Michaels is our guy. He's going to still be a babyface. You know, lost his smile. People hated him even more, okay, because that. And what did they do with him? They turned him heel.
Yeah.
And he was, now, he's not a merchandising guy Cena, but
here's the thing, though. But in 96, they were doing so much along the lines of the Chippendales crap. Here's the funny thing. Later in his career, they figured it out. He's the showstopper. In 96, when he was in his athletic prime, it should have been he won the championship because he's the best in the world. He goes out there, and if he had been presented as he is the best instead of he's the boy toy still and all this other stuff, then maybe he could have gotten over, but they completely alienated the male audience.
Well, here's what's interesting. Cena, I would argue, is the exact inverse or the opposite of that. He's pushed as he is the best. CM Punk brought this up.
Yeah.
And he's not the best. He's the most... I don't know what he is, to be honest. Why is John Cena on top?
He sells merchandise to kids. He's a money printing machine when it comes to merchandise for kids.
That's the only reason that he's on top?
Because, yeah.
Why else?
Oodles and oodles and oodles of money.
You're made the head writer of WWE tomorrow.
Yeah.
Why do you keep John Cena on top as your number one babyface? Just for that. Is there any other reason other than what you just told me?
There would be no other reason.
How do you
do
package
that?
Him then to the audience at large? You know, it's like, because kids aren't going to understand, you know, like kids just, they do just like him. I mean, mm-hmm. They don't really probably comprehend. Oh, they should because this, no other wrestler could sell a t-shirt to me quite like this guy could, right? But to the other, the smarter audience that does not like John Cena,
right?
How do you get John Cena over to them? Or can you?
You know what? Maybe what you do, maybe what it takes is just a year or so of just straight out moving him out of the title picture. Something like the Nexus feud, but more prolonged.
You do it. Maybe you do a good angle where he loses a lot,
yeah.
And he has good matches, maybe? I don't know. Or he
like a redemption thing. Okay, that could be.
But maybe they do something with the Tommy Dreamer Raven type thing, you know, where he just somebody just owns him.
I worry that that would be too smart. Well, part of it is too. Now,
I'm not saying just like it.
They're terrified though. If he loses too much, he'll be seen as a loser. Let's go back to what we said before. No, because it
would he though? I think he's bulletproof. I'm not talking about having him lose every pay. Hold on. The Rock, by the way, it's pretty funny. Remember that famous interview with Triple H?
Yeah.
Where, the top guys, I don't think there's ever been an instance in the history of wrestling where a top guy has lost all these pay-per-views and still been viewed as a top guy. And they're like, Rock's lost every pay-per-view the last 6 months. And he's
that's true. That's
you
true.
You know what I'm saying? I think if you get to a certain level,
right.
And there's not many guys at that level, you can lose several pay-per-views in a row.
But there's so much institutional mistrust. And that they're afraid to book Cena too weak. That's where it comes from. Super Cena stems from the front office's insecurity that if he loses too often, he'll be seen as a loser and the merch will drop. There's nothing more to it than that.
I have no proof of this, but I think they're wrong. I think that's it. I think that that's the way, because I think a certain audience, the audience looks at him and they're like, they're only pushing this guy for what you said, and that's not good enough for, that's not good enough for me.
Audiences do demand a payoff, though, and the whole thing is you can't drag out things to where the baby face loses for too long or whatever, because
he can get his revenge.
I know you disagree with me, but I thought the NWO craps, the first Sting Hogan match was dragged out way too long. You couldn't do it 18 months after the start of the invasion.
I think the buy rate says differently. the execution of the match was atrocious.
The one buy rate, and then what happened in 98 and 99?
Yeah, not because they waited 18 months.
They looked like the whole
No.
WCW it wasn't because they waited like losers 18. After 18 months. They looked like losers.
No, they
compared
looked
to
like
the
they looked like losers because of the next 10 minutes, not that 18 months. The
well,
way
okay.
The match itself. That match is an.
I'm not letting them off
Sting,
the hook for the match.
If Sting comes out and crushes Hogan clean,
yeah,
and the NWO, this is to me. If you know, I don't like fancy booking, sometimes whatever, I take it or leave it. But if I rebook WCW,
mm-hmm.
which I had some time in recently to do, but
well, summer vacation.
Yeah, this is a young man's summer vacation. But you have Sting go in and just crush Hogan at Starrcade.
Okay.
Well, the match wasn't going to go long anyway. You just have him crush him. Bret Hart, that referee. Remember, I remember Dave Meltzer talked about that when Bischoff described that. Remember how Bret Hart came down and he. Well, the whole idea, Nick. First of all, Hogan's an ass. Okay,
right.
Hulk Hogan is an ass.
Right.
All right, I don't care what he. Because he. You want to talk about people, why are you so critical of him? When he went into business for himself with Nick Pat. Included with Nick Patrick to ruin the booking of that
yep.
match, you're an ass.
Yeah.
Because Meltzer tells a story how Bischoff was like. Like, just, like, so proud of himself for this mm-hmm. idea he came up with that, okay, they're going to do this, like, Montreal ripoff. And Montreal was hot at the time. It was mm-hmm. a month removed. Bret Hart's going to come down and say, no, we're not doing it this way. He's going to restart, and Sting's going to crush him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be so awesome. Well,
right.
That could have been okay.
It's predicated on the first three count not being a real three count.
Yeah, exactly. But to me, even doing that
mm-hmm.
was kind of stupid. Like, the whole, it should have literally, like, honest to God, I know it's your huge match. At the biggest show of the year.
Right.
It should have been a 5-minute match with Sting just no-selling everything and destroying him.
Yeah.
And then the next night, Kevin Nash and Hogan get into a huge argument. NWO splits up.
Okay.
WCW, I'm not guaranteeing that it would still be in business today if they just do that and work from that.
That would
but
help.
But it would have been a lot. The ship wouldn't have sank as quick.
All right. Well,
why did we get to that match, by the way?
Maybe we can find a compromise point of view here on this. Would you agree with me, then, that... Yeah, I go back to you can't drag out the babyface win indefinitely. If they went to this eight pay-per-views a year, if it was eight because my whole thing is you can't have month after month John Cena looking up at the lights. I think they're way too insecure, and you think they're
way too insecure.
We're not disagreeing on that.
I also don't think you could have John Cena month after month in the main event.
No.
Winning.
But here's the thing, too.
Or trading wins and losses.
I'm going to go back to your original critique on this, and I'm going to tell you my answer to what you're talking about this divided audience thing here. The audience is divided, not completely because of this, because they're conditioned to be split because of these different factors, but it's because John Cena's in the way. If John Cena moved to SmackDown and CM Punk was the focus.
Oh, see, we're gonna...
I'm the guy taking on this WWE establishment, whatever. I think it'd be a different story. John Cena's in the way because as long as you have Punk and Cena as now the co-biggest faces on Raw, you will always have
the split. Because they're trying
reaction.
To have their cake and eat it, too.
Yes, you can't do that.
That's vintage them when rather than book things properly, they're
right.
like, okay, we'll give the kids their guy and we'll give the smart marks their guy.
Right.
And it doesn't work out.
Right.
I mean, it works better in theory than
right.
in practice. You
the
know, I can
child,
see why they would do it.
Right.
Because, you know, in the boardroom, it sounds real good.
Right.
Oh, yeah, we're gonna this way, we've got a guy on top that appeals to everybody. But
right.
wrestling doesn't work that way is what they don't understand.
Right.
Now, see, here's you just opened a huge can of worms.
Okay.
I hate the brand extension.
Sure.
You know me. I have bitched about the brand extension. And you'll never believe there's only one person who knows the true reason I hate the brand extension the most.
Okay.
The best reason. The old little fella.
Okay.
The little guy.
Okay.
He was stunned when I told him why I hated it.
Why?
And then he thought about it. He's like, oh, wow, that's a real good answer.
Why?
Especially coming from me. Too much first-run wrestling to watch in a week.
Well.
Because keep in mind.
What's your idea? Just cancel a show?
No. SmackDown is already the B show, right?
Yeah.
Treat it like just let's stop. Look, it's on Friday because let me tell you something. The way it's
so mid card mania, pretty much top to bottom.
No, you can have top guys on there.
Okay,
but first of all, there's only one. This was what's laughable. And see, they don't understand this because they're too far in the forest.
Okay,
you know, to understand a couple of these trees. Okay, I had a couple guys over to watch SummerSlam, and they kept talking about there will only be one WWE champion after this match. Well, what the hell? I just watched Randy Orton and Christian.
Right.
There's actually three champions, you know.
Right.
There should not the split champion is stupid. First
right.
of all,
right.
Okay. And but my original point is the way that WWE is currently set up, where you have the Raw brand and the SmackDown brand. Now
right.
it looks like they're kind of you know, kind of clouding that a little bit, which makes the two championships even stupider.
Yeah. Soft merger is the stupidest thing of all.
Again, too scared. Scared cowards, as Mike Tyson would say.
Right.
The way it is, you have to watch two, you know, to be emotionally invested, you have to watch 2 hours of Raw and 2 hours of SmackDown every week. Now,
right.
I watch, now I'm going to not sit here and tell you I don't watch more than 4 hours of wrestling per week.
Right.
Okay, I'm not going to tell you that.
Right.
I usually do. Two of them, even if two of them are Raw.
Right.
But to ask most people, a large number of people, to watch 4 hours of first-run wrestling a week is too much.
Yeah, it is.
It's too much, and that's why SmackDown's always seen as the B-show anyway, because when people are going to pick, they're going to pick Raw, because first of all, SmackDown's on a Friday, and people go out on Fridays. Monday's not a big going-out night. So why not just... And Buck Woodward, we agreed on one thing ever in the history of talking wrestling. The brand extension is just a lazy way to not be able to is just a lazy way to book two shows. Okay, these guys are going to be on this show. These guys are going to be on this show.
Agreed.
It's laziness. Agreed. To me, it's like you don't have to have the same guys and the same show every week. You don't have to, you know, obviously.
Well, I wouldn't have abandoned WCW. I would have tried. I think you got to do it as two separate promotions.
I disagree.
Here's the only thing that I'm concerned about, because I thought the brand extension was a bad idea, but the whole psychology of you're only going to have a handful of guys on top, you risk getting stale, it's the same matchups and everything like that. Part of it is, too, you don't have a thing where we go back to Ring of Honor. In Ring of Honor, regularly, and you've watched a thousand times more of it than I have, maybe more so, but you can have top guys band together and win the World Tag Team title, and that is hugely meaningful. If you had that in a WWE, it might be a little bit different. If you could do a thing where John Cena could tag up with somebody, say The Miz or whatever, if they do an odd couple route, whatever it is, and win the World Tag Team titles, and it's not considered a step down. Now, the tag pennies are considered to be a step down from that. But barring that, I mean, that's my whole thing about ending the brand extension. How do you have, in one promotion, John Cena, Randy Orton, CM Punk, all faces, by the way, in there? Things might be even worse by the metric of what you're talking about.
I disagree. They have fewer over people than they've ever had, yet more champ. You're falling into the trap, oh, this guy's somewhat over. We've got to get him a title to recognize that he's somewhat over. Once again, the Jim Duggan, Jake Roberts syndrome. Widely popular, 6-year runs, never had titles. You can be, oh, you don't have, like, this concept, I hate that concept. Oh, this guy's a little bit over. He's got to have some sort of title.
But here's a problem, though. Jim Duggan was, I think, multiple times, or at least once, North American champion,
Yeah, you got to keep in mind, not a lot of people know that.
But here's the thing, though. The audience wasn't conditioned to seeing him with a belt. These guys now, this entire generation has come up on, if you're that great, you're going to have a world title. Wes is Moore doesn't play with this generation.
I think it can. I think you can recondition him. Keep in mind this.
Okay.
Because first of all, what they're doing isn't working. Okay, you talk about, less time. Oh, it's going to be all taken up by the top guys. Number one, it doesn't have to be.
Okay.
Yeah, all right, first of all, you need to be skilled and you need to know how to budget your time properly.
Okay.
Raw and Nitro used to be one-hour shows, and they used to draw bigger buy rates than what the WWE gets now,
yeah,
4 hours of first-run programming.
Right.
Now, granted, they had Saturday, your WCW Saturday nights and some of these other fringe
Power programs. Hour.
Yeah, but those shows never did anything. Those shows really never added to buys. It was hitting them hard. You know, I've been watching the old Nitros,
okay,
for instance, for now, and I don't like it. Okay, there's stuff I do look, but what I don't like, this Hulk Hogan giant angle was pretty stupid in retrospect. It's it's almost downright embarrassing now to watch. But you know what they did? They just kept hitting you with it, and they made it seem really important.
Okay,
what you need to do to sell pay-per-view is find one angle to be real important. You know, the mid-card stuff, believe it or not, and this is coming from a guy who likes all those matches, you don't need a lot of setup for that. To me, they overbook this stuff so much that by the time you actually get to the show, you no longer care.
Right.
Whereas with the mid-card, they'd be better just, you know, you got a month. Just do on one of these shows, just shoot some sort of basic conflict and say, okay, these two guys are going to wrestle out.
Okay.
They'd be better with that. Less is more with wrestling. They have, you're right, they've conditioned the audience to think differently.
Right.
But I think that the stats would show that they're wrong in doing so. Because the numbers show that when less was more.
Yeah.
You know, for Christ's sake, what did some of these old WrestleManias do by rates when they had syndicated, when there was no Monday Night Raw, they had syndicated shows.
Right. That's true. That's true.
They put 93,000 people, I mean, not to go real old school on here, in the Pontiac Silverdome with syndicated program, with squash matches.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's true. That was
okay, you know what I'm saying?
That was the epitome of less versus more. Yeah, you never
squash
saw
squash match. And now, granted, it was different because, oh, wow, you were actually going to see the big stars. I mean,
right.
You know,
nobody faced off.
I'm not saying to go back to squash matches.
Right.
But I think they do too much. They have too many, you know, guys who have some potential. They square off that, oh, well, you know, they get in this thing, oh, well, shit, everyone, you know, craps on us when we don't do a clean finish, so someone's got to lose. And they have too many people are losing on these shows.
Okay.
If they would just pace themselves better, make things seem more important, because nothing seems important on these shows, ever. That's the thing. That's the great irony of wrestling in the last 5, 6, whatever years, is that they try to make everything seem so important every segment, and yet nothing does. When back in the day, you know, they just went about their business and stuff, see, like that Hulk Hogan Giant match. They just hit you, oh, my God, Monster Truck Challenge. It was stupid. I mean, I didn't like it. I mean, I didn't order the pay-per-view way back when either, so maybe this is a bad example. But I guarantee, I mean, you know, shows like that seem to draw a lot more interest than, I mean, I don't have the buys in front of me, but, I mean, and Halloween Havoc 95 is probably a terrible example, but you know what I'm saying? Like, older pay-per-views, more people are buying those, at least domestically, than are buying, I mean, domestic pay-per-views at an all-time low right now, so that says to me you're doing something wrong. What you're doing is wrong.
While we're at it, all right, if we're going to recommend a reform package for them here, would you agree with me? Ideally, 8 pay-per-views a year, no more than 10, but you got to scale it because you can't, particularly if you're doing a merger, if you're doing less titles, whatever, you can't be giving the same matchups month after month. I know you're saying you're going to, you know, cycle through the matchups, but no, you can't do
12 a year. But here's the thing: they're so conditioned to, okay, the world title match has got to be the main event, and usually, I mean, it should be, you know,
and it has to be if there's only one world title.
Or, I don't think it does.
Really?
I don't think it does. I mean, first of all, these concepts.
Short of like Cena versus The Undertaker, I'm hard pressed to think of what goes on after a world title match out of their present crew. What justifies it?
But keep in mind, I'm thinking outside the box.
Okay.
I'm talking about blowing up the infrastructure. You're telling me that you cannot. And once again, you have to use your imagination here, which is rough. You're telling me just that you, and maybe it's the wrong one. Maybe it doesn't work out that well. But you're telling me that if you were given the book again of WWE, that you could not make a non-world title match, at least on one pay-per-view, between two guys. You could not book an issue seem more important than a world title match. You're telling me you couldn't do that.
Like once and in the course of a year?
Maybe, I could do it. Maybe twice.
Once, maybe twice, maybe. It also depends on the latitude I have here, too. I mean, as we're sitting here recommending
reforms. Remember Shawn Michaels Shawn Michaels Undertaker is, I mean, you're talking about two of the all-time greats.
Right.
But back in 97,
right.
Remember Shawn, he let Brett know about it quite frequently on Raw. You know, hey, maybe you're the world champion, but unless you're wrestling me, you know, you're only support on my pay-per-views.
If we're talking about returning guys, if we're talking about special
Triple
attractions.
Triple H has done it too.
Okay,
before.
Yeah.
You can do it. It just takes
quality
booking.
Right.
They do it the lazy way. Let's see. All right, yeah, we got two world title. Like now, it's perfect for them because it's lazy crap. Okay, we got two world title matches, so that gives us two big matches on every pay per view. But yet, no one cares about either of them.
But here's the thing, though: by having 12 pay per views a year, it is obligatory to have John Cena on there, Randy Orton on there. At this point,
I don't think you would have
You can't recondition the audience.
I think you can.
There's no way. But you're not getting him this month. You can't put the toothpaste back in that tube.
You could put them in a non-important match. Just a match that isn't the main event. To me,
John Cena versus the Duke of Dorchester? I don't think people are going to go for that.
I don't know. Maybe you just shoot. The Rock wrestled I went to a pay-per-view in 99 where The Rock wrestled a British Bulldog where it had to do with rock-bottoming people and dog
poop. The Bulldog was getting a pretty good push, though.
Yeah, but he wasn't very – but let's be honest.
He wasn't good. No,
okay,
no.
Okay, yeah, he wasn't that good, and it, no. And history shows that that was a throwaway angle. Rock also – okay, Rock again. Because I'm using The Rock in 99 as an example because it goes in the face of all the Triple H WWE thinking. Not to, I'm not a Triple H hater by any means. Mm-hmm. Wrestled Mr. Ass on the second biggest pay-per-view of the year that year. Throwaway
again,
match.
You're kind of making my point for me. Coming off of King of the Ring, getting a big push.
Well,
both
I'm
times
not,
he was getting guys
you,
getting
I'm not
a big
telling
push.
You Cena would be jerking the curtain
right.
half the year.
Right.
But he did, the whole idea is, okay, we've got two title matches. Okay, we've got to find a way for this guy to be involved. This guy, that's laziness.
But Kyle, with only one title, how many and again, in our ideal perfect world, John Cena wouldn't be, you know, the planet that they're the stars are circling around with the world title picture here. How do you get John Cena 12 matchups a year, particularly if he's not the world champion? I'd rather only have to answer that question 8 times. I wouldn't want to have to answer that question 12 times a year.
Sure, it would be, but to me, that's, you know, I mean, a lot of things I've said aren't going to happen. That's
right.
Unrealistic. You're not going to get, to me, Steve Austin, again, he was on a paper. Where, you know what?
Well,
this is sad.
Yeah.
I could probably do it. Steve Austin. All right, first of all, what's interesting, they try these concept pay-per-views, but devalue the concept of them. Okay?
Right.
You know, it's so interesting they have a pay-per-view called Hell in a Cell now. But Hell in a Cell, in my opinion, is viewed as low as it's ever been.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's October, so it means it's time for people to hate one another enough to go in the hell of the,
exactly.
in the cell.
There's ways
we don't have any feuds,
Steve
but whatever.
Austin, okay? Let's talk about Steve Austin's great year, 98. I'm about ready to make you vomit because I'm going to do this without looking at
all
any
right.
page. I think. All right, 1998, he wins the Royal Rumble.
Yes.
Okay. No Way Out of Texas, by the way, in parentheses. It was not just No Way Out. For some reason, it was No Way Out of Texas, which, by
secret,
the way.
Secret yes. guy in the ring,
yeah, that's,
Savio Vega.
Yeah, that's what Republicans, by the way, threaten us with, I think, No Way Out of Texas. But they did that. That was a pay-per-view, and then people said, well, that's stupid. I would never stand for that. Really, WrestleMania 14 didn't do very well? So obviously that pay-per-view worked. It was kind of a clear – it was what I think many people call – and I'm not saying you could get away with that now because you're right, the audience has
that
the condition.
That was Clash of the Champions on pay-per-view. Is what that was.
Okay, and it probably didn't do that great, but guess what?
Didn't
in
hurt
the,
Mania.
In the grand
yeah.
scheme of things?
Didn't hurt Mania, you're right.
It didn't hurt Mania, it helped
no.
it because it built up tension for what was, remember back then? Austin Michaels.
You're not helping him, Rome, you're hurting him.
Yeah, you're not helping yeah. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, yes. But no, it built up WrestleMania. It was very logical. Okay, yeah,
right.
Not every paper, see, again, they try to have this mentality. Every pay-per-view's got to be the biggest one ever. The Tony Schiavone syndrome.
Right.
Well, guess what? That mentality hasn't paid the frickin' bills, in my opinion. Some pay-per-views are not – all pay-per-views are not inherently created equal. And guess what? WrestleMania is obviously the big one, right? What's the one that draws?
WrestleMania.
Okay, well, it's not because it's so much better booked.
Right.
It's just because it's the one that people view as the best.
Right.
It's going to be the biggest. They've come to expect a certain thing.
Right.
You can't do that 12 times a year.
So Austin popped it at Mania and did great there.
Okay. He wrestles Backlash. Okay, what do you do? Okay, so he challenges for the championship. Okay. Earns title shot. Clash of Champions on pay-per-view where he was supposedly going to be in the ring with the champion. The
right.
champion was hurt, whatever. I mean, it's, you know, but it still built tension for that match. You know, he got in there with
it served its purpose.
He stunned China that put heat on the match. Wins title at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Michaels is out of the picture now.
Yeah.
By the way, WWE could not have been where it was if they didn't get rid of Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels.
That's
Gary
true.
Hart says, whenever a company takes off, you have to get rid of all the old people. They're afraid to do that, WWE.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so he needs a new challenger, right? Steve Austin, he's the
yep.
champion, right? Enter Dude Love. Wrestles him once. It's an inconclusive finish. They did the thing where, I think it was a DQ finish. Actually.
Yeah, McMahon interfered.
And he got hit with the chair,
yeah.
which sets up the next pay-per-view where they did the unbelievable match at Over the Edge 98. You talk about a historically underrated match.
By the way, though, you're breaking historic taboos during these pay-per-views of, like, Vince McMahon coming out from behind a camera. Vince McMahon gets hit by a chair for the first time.
You're right. Now, you're right. They
these
were.
Not,
you're right.
There's
you're,
no modern.
You're right. You're right. You're right that the
equivalent.
Is, they did pull the curtain back so much
yeah.
in that era that it's tough. What's the next level?
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
That is an issue. But
yeah.
it's an issue no matter which way you go.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. But now, what did they. Now, but hold on here.
Okay.
Steve Austin, Dude Love. Oh, you're saying, oh, it's kind of stupid, world title match, non-finish, oh, they're going to wrestle again next month. Well, they had that kind of equally dumb Inferno match that drew a lot of interest. I mean, that was kind of stupid, too. But
right.
I mean, but these things work. They drew interest. I mean, I may not have liked them, but I can't argue that 98 was better.
Yeah, they were red hot.
Okay, so you've got that.
Yep.
King of the Ring 98.
Yep.
Okay, Steve Austin wrestles Kane now. Okay. And then, well, of course, you had the big Hell in the Cell match, which the pay-per-view's famous for.
I was there. That was completely unforgettable.
And then also, King of the Ring, which that was kind of the year that became kind of a mid-card. Well, I think it had been already, but it was...
Shamrock beating The Rock was pretty huge.
Again, they built it up perfectly. It was... And you have a theme separate of the show. You have something else to sell on the show. Okay? So from a sales perspective, I think we're 6-for-6 here.
Okay,
then you had... the next pay-per-view, again, what you would call Clash of Champions on pay-per-view, fully loaded, was a tag match, Austin and Undertaker versus Foley and Kane.
That's right.
Okay? Again, not blow away, but we're finding different ways. It's not a world title match with Steve Austin. Okay? And that's, of course, to build you got a highway to hell. Okay, you've got that at SummerSlam.
Well, I'm not going to compare... Because nothing compares to the whole McMahon part of it. The unprecedented part of Vince McMahon turns into Mr. McMahon. But by the same token, Steve Austin becoming the hottest character since Hulk Hogan, teaming up with The Undertaker, the Hardy perennial over the years, that in and of itself was such a first that I don't think there's no modern equivalent to pairing Steve Austin circa 1998 and The Undertaker for the first time.
Yeah, but
there's no modern equivalent.
Because you've dug a hole, because keep in mind, now, granted, they were coming off an era where things were done a little differently. Things were a little slower.
Right.
But when Undertaker and Shawn, one of the things that made the first Undertaker Shawn Michaels feud so great is they had both been in the company for 7 years, and they had never wrestled.
Right.
Which, I mean, now, it's like, can you imagine?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, a match where literally, not the old Hogan Andre, you know, these men have never wrestled before. Andre's undefeated. You know, but... I don't think there's two guys that have been in the company for 7 years that have not wrestled.
No, it's true. But part of that comes from Shawn was a classic climb the ladder kind of a guy. The Undertaker came in at least close to a main event level. They wouldn't have crossed paths because Shawn at that time was a tag guy, then became a mid-card heel, then slowly kind of became, you know, upper mid-card heel. By the time he was a main eventer, it was, you know, at least 5 years.
You're making because they don't do upward mobility like Shawn.
Right. That's true.
You're shooting this stuff. You're telling me, like, in the history, like, Jeff Hardy, once upon a before, you know.
Okay.
Well, you know, through his life in the crapper. Here's a guy who worked his way up, Edge and Christian.
Right.
I mean, you know, they worked their way up, but the problem is they also take those guys along the way and treat them as jobbers in solo mat and have them job to these guys.
Right.
You know, which hurts, but that's a different thing. But
right.
Continuing with, you're right.
SummerSlam,
I'm making this, I'm using you're the best case example.
By far.
Okay.
But proceed.
But I'm showing that it's possible.
Okay.
Okay, the next month they did that triple threat match. Undertaker and Kane, remember they did that?
Yeah.
It was that screwy way to get the belt off him. They did a double pin on him.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the next pay-per-view, he doesn't wrestle. They did Undertaker versus Kane at, it was called Judgment Day.
Right.
One was called Breakdown, the other one was called Judgment Day. He's the referee, though.
Right.
Okay, the belt was vacant. They did that goofy tournament, Survivor Series, which had, like...
That was around the time that he rode my beloved Joe Louis Arena Zamboni to come out and attack them.
Yeah, again.
Yeah.
Okay, the Survivor Series, okay, and he doesn't win it.
Okay.
He was part of, obviously, that was a very big storyline. That's the way WWE does tournaments. They don't do them like the Super J Cup, folks, okay? All right, too. I'm sorry, it's not going to happen. The next month, Rock is your champion, okay? Believe it or not, there was a time when Rock is a champion. I don't know about this. He was in the semi-main against Foley, and then you had Austin Undertaker buried alive.
Right.
Which, a non-world title match, by the way.
Right.
Again, I'm using, you know, they had a lot of things going for him that year. But to say that you can't find ways to do this.
Okay.
Here's the other thing, too. Okay, yeah, I'm using Austin, best case example. That whole year, basically, the last 8 months, they used the same four guys in the top matches.
Five
with The Rock. You got more, you believe it or not, you have more guys now, especially if you merged it, for those top spots.
Here's the thing, though, and I don't want to come off like a hypocrite because I'm the same guy that screams at Larry Dolan, you got to spend money to make money, but what you're talking about here, and I agree in principle with everything that you're saying, but you're talking about a company and one that's publicly traded, no less.
Which I don't like. I think that's been amazing. You know what? It's great for the McMahons, but Maybe just a coincidence. Don't you think that the storylines and the booking of wrestling that we used to love?
Yeah.
That's kind of what it took a hit.
Being answerable to shareholders, but by the same token, they also consider themselves highly answerable to advertisers. So you're not going to completely get out of the outside influences thing. I agree with you. I think I would say step one in your plan would be company buys back the stock and is not answerable, at least to the stockholders, because there's that. But you have that issue. But my point is, you're looking at the company.
Well, step one would actually get someone with a brain.
True, but you'd have to admit on all of this, while you're making a convincing point on all of this, you're talking about a year of setup. The reconditioning won't happen overnight. It is going to be a brutal MF-er of a year while you're getting your pieces in place. You must admit that.
But here's the thing. The floor is not that much lower than where you're at. You're not falling off a cliff. You're falling off a ledge.
Okay.
Domestic pay-per-views, I can't stress this enough, are at an all-time low.
Right.
I mean, you're doing they were like happy with doing like 150,000.
Right.
That's hideous.
Well, you know, and the fact that they're already sort of beating themselves to the point on this next thing I was going to ask you, bringing back Triple H to wrestle CM Punk.
Oh, that's stupid.
Night of Champions. It is. But, I mean.
Here's a perfect example.
Yeah.
I'm so glad, because let me go off on this. I can't even tell you how bass-ackwards and wrong this is. Let me tell you how dumb this company is right now. Pay-per-view's called Night of Champions, right?
Yeah.
They're supposed to do these themed pay-per-views if it's not a major one, right? Every match is a championship match.
It's the only night all... They've moved to it's the only night all year all titles are defended. Which, by the way...
Which is a lie.
Get rid of it. No, it's not a lie, because...
Really? There hasn't been one?
Well, see, but here... No, but what they'll do... Here's what they'll do. There might be a month where there's no women's title match, or it's a tag match.
Again, okay. Most people... Really? The crowd at large is going to just think that's dumb. Like, they're nitpicking. You know, that's kind of like...
By the way,
you're not.
Right.
You know, like, they're laughing at me.
Oh, smart mark. You think you know it all. Yeah, you were wrong.
Well, guess what? It's called Night of Champions, okay? And here they were hyping originally a CM Punk-Kevin Nash match, which was not a championship match. Kevin Nash gets hurt, okay? And they can't have the match. Just don't do the damn match.
But it was pointed out, though, that last year they broke the seal on that last year. CM Punk, ironically, against the Big Show, was the first non-title match at Night of Champions.
So why did they do that again? Can you refresh my memory? I was obviously not caring.
Because they had a stupid feud at the time. It was pointless. It was a pretty stupid thing. But anyways.
Now I remember what I don't remember.
I'm just saying, it's stupid, but there's precedent for an extra match is what they would call it,
well,
I guess.
Well, here's what I'm saying. Okay,
by the way, no more Night of Champions if you get rid of the brand split, because every month's going to be Night of Champions or close to it.
I mean, do you think that's a good selling point?
It's not a great reason.
Is somebody listening to this podcast right now saying, God damn you two, it's September, and that means it's time for every title to be defended on a WWE favorite. Really? Is there someone out there that thinks that, Ricky? No, there's not.
I think
okay.
there's more
so
people
here's
that are
thing.
Bemoaning the loss of Fall Brawl in September.
Yes, okay. So here's my thing. First of all, if you're going to do these theme pay-per-views, right, you have a theme, okay?
Yeah.
Just... Don't do them. Like, why do you have to, first of all, rush a match that could conceivably draw on a bigger pay-per-view?
Right.
On a pay-per-view that ain't going to do diddly-poo. That doesn't make sense with your stipulations anyway.
True.
They just shouldn't do, I don't.
It's
like,
the month-to-month
because they're
thing.
Scared.
We
got to
pop a buy rate this
we
month.
We got to have, exactly. Yeah. And guess what's going to happen when they do this match? They're going to be kicking themselves in 2 months when they can't do it at Survivor Series.
Right.
This match was not, like, there hasn't been a big turn. Like, I'll be honest with you, full candor, I did not watch the execution of the angle. I've only read about it.
Okay.
But to me, I don't feel that I even need to watch how it was because it seemed rushed at the end of the show. Triple H is like, well, now I'm going to wrestle you.
Right.
It's not very interesting.
No. But I guess that was my point here. As we're going full circle to wrap this thing up for the night, I guess the last point that I'm going to make to you in the course of all of this, Kyle, is when you get to the whole thing of the whole point of Triple H coming out of, it's not exactly retirement, but coming out of the front office to wrestle CM Punk, I think it then becomes a circumstance where you have a situation available to you. If we're going to go with the way that you're setting things up, if we're going to go to the whole system of that we're going to recondition the audience, there's not going to be as many titles, there's going to be some things that are not about titles. That's my last point for the evening here, is that that's one way to do it, and they've kind of shot themselves in the foot by hot-shotting Triple H here. But for that transitional period of reconditioning the audience, that might be the way of doing it. Like, for example, if it turns out there's a little more juice left in the rind that The Undertaker might have more than one match in him, you bring back The Undertaker for one of these months. You bring Triple H in. You go the special attraction route as a bridge while you're reconditioning the audience. Is that a way to do it?
Yes. To me, you have four or five major pay-per-views a year.
Okay.
Okay. The UFC did this, actually, for a while, until they started, like, they oversaturated the market, trying to make everything seem so awesome every month. And that in between, you just set up. See, when I do, and I hate saying fantasy book, even though I do it all the time.
Yeah.
I always think, well, I don't know how you do it, but this is the way I think about it. Okay, here is the WrestleMania main event. This is what I would like to see at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
I decide what I want to see at SummerSlam, and then you fill in the blanks.
Right. That's how I do it.
You fill in the blanks. You don't. They do it like, okay, we have this idea, but they don't worry about filling in the blanks. They just, like, do all these things, and by the time they get to where they wanted to be, it's all screwed up.
Right.
To me, it's like, okay, well, you got to make sure you don't screw up.
Right.
You know, this is how we want it to be in there, and you don't do that much, like, in between. You maybe have just, like, a, you know, Clash of Champions on pay-per-view, like you say.
Absolutely.
Or do a six-man tag or something, like, or just say, you know, this match, there's just different ways to do it.
Well, we've covered a tremendous amount of ground here tonight, and we got actually three podcasts worth out of this.
Okay, good. Well, when you, I was going to say, when you edit this stuff up, there's plenty to edit. Yes.
Exactly. So we'll be doing it in the pieces. Thanks very much, Kyle Ross. Looking forward to more of these great mini episodes here at the FDH Lounge. Thank you so much, my man.
It was a pleasure, Ricky.
All right, pal. I'll do it again soon. Thank you.